Picture your face in the mirror. Do you see all those wrinkles under your eyes? How about crow's feet? Or those large under-eye bags? Now imagine they're gone. I'm not talking about some risky, expensive surgery. Just gone in minutes. It's called Plexaderm, a clinically studied serum that visibly eliminates your wrinkles, crow's feet, and under-eye bags in minutes. It's the edge you've been looking for. Don't believe it? I didn't either until I tried it. Now I don't have to imagine anymore. I look like me, just a few years younger. Simply put, I'm blown away by the results. So go to tryplexiderm.com and use my code VOICES for 50% off a full-size bottle of Plexiderm plus an additional $10 off. That's right, 50% off plus an extra 10 bucks off. This offer is also available by calling 1-800-685-1292 and mentioning code VOICES. Plexiderm is backed by a 30-day money-back guarantee. Visit tryplexiderm.com today and use code VOICES at checkout. That's tryplexiderm.com, code VOICES. Welcome to Amped Up with Proud Resister. This is progressive activist Ryan Knight.
And I'm Chris Lavoie, The Stephanie Miller Show.
And our guest today is Anthony Clark. Anthony is a veteran, a teacher, a nonprofit director, and he's a congressional candidate for Illinois' 7th District. Anthony, welcome to Amped Up.
Thank you. Thank you all for having me. Pleasure to be on. Truly humbling experience. I look forward to the conversation.
Oh, yeah, me too. Since this is your first time on the show, why don't you start off by giving us a little bit about your background and why you're running for Congress?
Definitely. I'll try to sum it up as best as possible. I was born on the south side of Chicago, Ryan and Blanche Clark, my best friends, my parents still married to this day, celebrating over 40 years. Two working class community members, neither were college educated, but they worked extremely hard, you know, the majority of their lives to provide me with better, like so many families are attempting to do for their children and loved ones. So they scraped together their money. Moved me out of the south side of Chicago into Oak Park, Illinois, predominantly white community, which they deemed had better opportunity. So grew up, you know, with that dichotomy that existed in the sense of traveling to see family and friends, where you could literally cross the street and everything changes from infrastructure investment to, grocery stores, to food deserts to, you go from a median income of, $25,000 to $30,000 to $80,000 to $85,000. So, experiencing that from an early age, growing up as a black male in society, often struggling to find myself. When I graduated from high school, I got into a little trouble, and that led me to what I call the poverty draft. Ended up in the military because what of the military? I think is one of the largest welfare states. I served 6 years active duty. What did they offer? They offer health care. They offer guaranteed employment. They offer housing. They offer food, and they offer to pay for your education. Many of the things progressives are fighting for now, minus the military-industrial complex and forever wars. That's what I tell people. It's rich person wars fought and died for by poor people. So I was shot in 2007 while serving. Was medically discharged due to that. I have PTSD as well as Behçet's disease, an autoimmune deficiency from working with chemicals within the military because the military is also a heavy polluter, with carbon emissions and so on and so forth. Went through the Troops of Teachers program, became a teacher, teaching back in the 7th Congressional District. I taught 2 years alternative, 1 year charter, went into CPS during the strike here in 2012, Chicago Public Schools. And I'm at my alma mater, Oak Park and River Forest High School. So I've been teaching for 11 years. I've lost 12 students to gun violence in that 11 years of teaching. A lot of pervasive issues that exist. So I started a nonprofit in 2016 to address equity issues. We've done everything from pay for school to pay for rent to pay for mortgage to buy groceries to help the homeless, to help survivors of sex trafficking, to help immigrant populations, so on and so forth. And based upon that work, I received the Villager of the Year Award in 2017. Don't really believe in individual accolades, but it is what it is. And then from there.
Hey, you're doing the work.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We were nominated to run for Congress through Brand New Congress and Justice Democrats. So I met now Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Yep.
Cori Bush, Paula Jean Swearengen. We all became friends. We all ran. And we're back building that up momentum, running again in 2020 in the 7th Congressional District and, really boost to the ground, 10 toes down, doing the work.
I love that. Hearing you talk, firsthand the systemic issues that are plaguing our communities because you've lived them. And one of the reasons that, I fight for progressive change is that After Donald Trump was elected, it became pretty clear to me that Donald Trump was not the disease, if you will, right? He was a symptom of a much bigger problem. You know, the disease in America is greed, and it has corrupted our political system, our economic system, and our healthcare system. And, you know, for too long, we've had, you know, people in Congress who've been there for 5, 10, 15, 20 years, and which, look, I applaud people for their service and for, you know, but it reaches a point where people are disconnected from the pain of their constituents and from the struggles of everyday Americans. So to hear someone like you talk so candidly about the, just from housing to the, you know, to gun violence, to, you know, systemic poverty and to systemic racism, to hear about the issues, that's, we need people like you in Congress fighting for these issues because you know how they impact people.
Yeah, I mean, you hit it, you know, right on the head. You know, I think it's interesting when you have 100% grassroots candidates going against long-time entrenched incumbents that are often protected by the machine. Often people tell you, well, you need experience. Well, look at what incumbents that have been in office 5, 10, 20 years. Where have their experience gotten us? I think the true experience is the experience in the struggle. Being born into this, being directly connected to the struggle on a daily basis, and recognizing this is class warfare. We want to end war, and the only war I'm interested in fighting is class war, the oppressed versus the oppressors. And as you stated, we challenge so many individuals as we're moving across the district and the country, speaking truth to power, to understand and recognize that Donald Trump is a symptom. Yep. He is not the root cause issue that we face. So if we're simply focused on getting rid of Donald Trump, if we don't treat the root cause, the sickness may leave for a short period of time, but it will return.
That's
there will
right.
be another Donald Trump and another Donald Trump.
Yep.
And I think what the issue is, Donald Trump essentially makes individuals uncomfortable. He's mask off, if you don't understand what I'm saying. The
yep.
issues that existed, yeah. he just makes you uncomfortable because you can't ignore that
yep.
the issues exist.
Yep.
But so many of us have lived them. So that's why we have to stay connected. And one of my biggest concerns, and while we're continuing to fight, what are we going to do as a society, all these coalitions that we built, when Donald Trump is no longer in office? Or, I'm going to be honest, just speaking for myself, when someone like Joe Biden is in office, does that mean that these issues don't exist anymore? Does that mean many people are going to go back to their bubble and being comfortable? We have to continue to fight, because oftentimes the Democratic establishment and the Republican Party, based upon my estimation, are two sides of the same coin. They both benefit from white supremacy. They both benefit from capitalistic oppression and patriarchy. So we really have a lot of work to do.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, it. One thing I like to tell people is, because I push some of the same buttons that you do, is, you know, it's really easy in politics to stand on the side of power, you know, but it's a lot harder to challenge power. You know, people will call you divisive. You know, people will say, you know, that you're helping Trump. But at the end of the day, unless we challenge the status quo and unless we start, you know, challenging all of this entrenched power, nothing is going to change, right? I mean, we heard Joe Biden say to a room of donors, a room of rich donors, what, 6 months ago, he said that nothing will fundamentally change.
Mm-hmm.
I just want people to understand, like, if nothing fundamentally changes, that means that poor and marginalized and vulnerable communities are going to keep struggling. We have reached an inflection point where we can't have nothing fundamentally changing. We have to have bold progressive change to heal the massive levels of inequality in America.
Definitely, definitely. I 100% agree with you. And, you know, I mean, it's interesting, you know, to see and see everything that's going on. You know, slavery ended in 1865, you know, identify as a black male, a black American. But yet slavery on so many different levels and nuances still exists, with privatization, with our prison industrial complex, with our military industrial complex. How many individuals are enslaved to debt, to where they wake up every day and they don't know where their next meal is coming from? They have to ration insulin. They don't know if their child or loved one is coming home from pervasive gun violence. All these issues are interconnected. So unless we fight for and give everything that we have for, you know, healthcare as a human right, housing as a human right, the Green New Deal, federal jobs guarantee, a livable wage, which connects to pervasive gun violence, which connects to all these other issues, as you stated, we're going to continue to struggle. So many people have to understand. I think it was LBJ who made this statement long ago. Don't quote me, but I believe he said something along the lines of, if you could convince the poorest white man that he's better than a rich black man, he will not only support you, but he'll empty his pockets for you. We have millions of people right now that are voting against their own interests because they're aspiring. They think they could get to being a billionaire. They think they could get to being a millionaire. You don't become a billionaire without oppression. You take that money. So we have to understand we're never going to get there. So you have to pick a side. You're either the 1% or you're the 99. And we're on the side of the 99, and we're giving everything that we have to fight for people, whether they recognize the importance of that fight or not.
Yeah, that's well said. You know, kind of continuing this conversation and kind of what's going on right now in our country, you know, as the coronavirus pandemic spreads, it has sent our financial markets into a panic and exposed the weakness in our healthcare system. While countries like South Korea, Singapore, and the United Kingdom have managed to efficiently handle the pandemic, America is lagging. We've only been able to test 11,000 people, and we won't have a vaccine for 12 to 18 months.
Yep.
President Trump has been completely incompetent and an unreliable source of information. But the most disturbing part of all of this for me is that the financial markets were injected with $1.5 trillion by the Fed. In other words, more socialism for the rich, while poor, low-income, and working-class Americans are in fear about how this pandemic will impact their health and their finances and their families, many of whom are uninsured or underinsured, as we are the only developed nation in the world where healthcare is not a human right. Skyler Johnson, who's running for the state Senate in New York, he tweeted something yesterday that I just want to read because I think it hits the nail on the head. He said, schools are closing. Where do I send my children? How do I afford health care? I can't afford to take off work. I don't have guaranteed housing if I leave school. The issues the virus is causing are literally everything progressives have been trying to fix for years in our country. What are your thoughts on all of that?
I mean, we're in agreement. You know, I think the virus is exposing the issues that, again, have always existed. And it's so interesting that no one has asked how are we going to pay for it when we come up with $1.5 trillion for, you know, when the stock market drops 2,300 points. But again, that's we have to understand. We are here by design. Working class people, working class poor. We did not get here by accident. This is a country built on oppression. The theft of land of natives, the genocide of natives, the enslavement of Africans. We could go on and on throughout history. This country benefits from othering. This country benefits from capitalistic oppression, as we said before, because it needs to maintain a bottom. It is actually, if you look, I challenge individuals to look at the data. It is actually cheaper to be proactive and treat the root cause than it is to continually respond to the symptoms. So, for example, it's cheaper to end homelessness than to respond to it and feed the homeless and temporarily house the homeless. It's cheaper to end it. Individuals don't understand this. Our government benefits from maintaining these symptoms and maintaining this wealth gap that continues to grow. And shout out to Skyler, a young leader. You know, I'm so excited about his race. Know him well. So that tweet was right on the head. But again, we never ask how we're going to pay for it when it comes to our military. We never ask how we're going to pay for it when it comes to corporate bailouts. And then somebody else hit it on the head. They tweeted, and I forgot who it was, but they stated it's funny how everybody becomes a socialist when a pandemic hits. That's real. It's everybody true. Has their red rose, right? Everybody's calling everybody a comrade now. When a pandemic hits, but we have to focus on the working class. Yeah. We are the ones who drive this economy. We are the ones who drive this country, but yet and still we're focused on banks. We're focused on the top 1%. We're focused on corporations. And that's why, you know, on the ground, I mean, it's ridiculous. I'm a teacher. So they closed down our school. Next week, we won't be in school. We just had training today to go to digital. So we're going to have over 3,700 kids that are out of school. Those are parents as well that are going to be impacted. They may have to take off work if you account for our middle schools and lower school grades as well. It's a huge issue that exists. So what we've done, we have to start essentially a GoFundMe. GoFundMe should never be the answer. Why are working class people continuing to do the work that our government should be doing? So we're starting a GoFundMe account to try to help students and families while we get through this process. And of course, we're 100%, you know, Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was talking about it yesterday. We're 100% in support of a stimulus package, you know, universal basic income to go out and support our working class families as we deal with this pandemic.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I think sometimes the disconnect, I think, is, you know, people who have a little bit of privilege, or, you know, maybe they're in the middle class or upper middle class, I don't think that they understand truly how broken and corrupt our political system is, right? So, you know, right now we have billionaires and corporations and big pharma and big tech, you know, and giant insurance corporate companies pouring billions of dollars into our political system via super PACs, via lobbying, via campaign donations to essentially influence our political system, right? And so, and they give to both Democrats and Republicans. And then the people that they influence to get in office, they get in office and they continue to write the rules and they continue to maintain a system that props up the rich and powerful and profits off the poor. And this system is going to continue until more people realize that we need people like you in office who aren't bought and paid for by the big corporations and the big banks. Because when you get in office, you are going to fight for the people who put you in office, which were your constituents. I mean, it's really that simple. But the best experience for Congress is no experience, because that means that you haven't had lobbyists knocking on your doors for 5 years. You don't have all these connections with big banks and billionaires and that want something from you. All you want to do is go in there and help the people. I mean, it's really that simple.
Definitely, definitely. Like we tell people, we're 100% funded by the big poor. And those are the only individuals that we answer to. You know, take the incumbent in Illinois 7. And that's why I always challenge that narrative that, you know, vote blue no matter who. Or, you know, that doesn't work, because so many individuals continue to struggle under that narrative. We have an incumbent that's been in his seat for over 20 years, his current seat. Illinois 7 has vast wealth disparities, pervasive gun violence that exists. 9% of Black African-Americans within this district are unemployed. The median income changes. As we stated earlier, you could go into the Austin community and the median income is about $25,000 to $30,000. Cross the street and the median income is $80,000 to $85,000. You go from food deserts to having 5 or 6 grocery stores in communities. Funding our school systems is a huge issue. Property taxes is a huge issue. That's inequitable. But what does our incumbent do? He works with individuals to push for privatization. We're 100% against privatization. He says he's for Medicare for all, but yet is funded by Big Pharma. He says he's for immigrant and workers' rights, but he's funded by Amazon. So these hypocrisies have to be exposed, and we have to continue to educate the public on why these hypocrisies matter. Because as you stated, it's impossible for you to truly represent the people and truly fight for the people if you're beholden to Big Pharma and other large corporations. It doesn't make sense. And that's why we're in the place that we're in now. We can't continue to point fingers. We can't continue to just call out Russia, Russia, Russia. We have to look ourselves in the mirror and understand that we have to hold ourselves accountable too.
Yeah, that's well said. I also think that, you know, people miss the nuance in it. Like, I'm not saying that a Republican is better than a Democrat. Like, no, and I'm not saying, like, I've never voted for a Republican in my life, so I'm never going to start doing that. What I'm saying is that, yes, a corporate Democrat or a more moderate Democrat is better than a Republican, but I'm tired of going to the polls every election cycle, in whether it's the midterm or the presidential election cycle, and I'm tired of just going and casting a ballot against the Republican. I want to vote for a Democrat who's fighting for the people. And I think people miss that distinction, that we can't just give people something to vote against. We have to give people something to vote for.
Yes, yes, 100%. Better is never going to be good enough for those that are oppressed. Better means that, okay, 2 million people are dying from lack of health care than 10 million. But those are still 2 million people dying. Better means that, you know, the police aren't pulling over and killing everybody, you know, but they're still doing it. Those that are oppressed in 2020, this now is the time to fight for the best. Why are we waiting? Why are we sitting back? Look at Joe Biden's record on the environment. I think he has a D- at best. That how does that work for individuals that are disproportionately impacted by pollution? If you look at the data, black and brown communities only produce maybe 10, 15, or 20% of pollution, but we intake 40, 50 to 60%. Look at Flint, Michigan. Look at what's going on in Chicago and elsewhere. So better is not good enough. For those who want it, is not good enough. Option is not good enough. We have to have it as a human right, and that's the only way to truly address the disparities that exist in our communities.
Yeah, you know, well said. I also think, you know, sometimes, you know, people don't see that how much the Democratic Party has moved to the right on economic issues. Yeah, our party is still very left on social issues. But when currently income inequality in our country is the highest that it's ever been in a half century. So when you have this level of inequality, it's not enough to just be progressive on social issues. We have to also be a party that's progressive on economic issues. And I think that's what people are missing, that we're not just in a moment where like moderate is enough. We're in a moment where like we need bold progressive change to reverse some of this inequality in our country. And if we don't, my fear is, look, I get it. Change is scary. You know, Trump is scary. I understand that. But for me, what's even scarier is what's going to happen if we don't change, if we don't start fighting these big battles, if we don't start fighting against the systemic inequality in our country, because it's only going to get worse. And what it comes down to is right now we have a government that is of, by, and for the corporations and billionaires. And we need to get a government that is of, by, and for the people, as our founders, as flawed as they were. You know, you talked about, you know, that we were founded on slavery. As flawed as they were, they still had the right principles in our Constitution, right? Of, by, and for the people. And we got to get back to that. Because if we don't, it's just going to be this, you know, pointing fingers back and forth. And, you know, I saw Michael Bloomberg he's, you know, he's assuming that Biden's going to win the nomination, and he's getting ready to launch like a whole campaign against the Trump children, because he knows that Trump is going to launch a campaign against Hunter Biden. And but I said to myself, like, here we have all these huge issues in our country and all this just systemic inequality, and we're going to have a presidential campaign that's about, you know, attacking the children of rich people. Like, is that where our politics has devolved?
They're going to have push-up contests. I mean, basically.
Right. Like, instead of tackling, like, the big issues that we need to. And so this is a good opportunity for us to kind of shift gears to our next segment, you know, and talk about the primary. Look, Biden is winning the electability battle, but Bernie is winning the ideological battle, as the overwhelming majority of Democratic voters support Bernie's progressive ideas like Medicare for all,
yep,
a Green New Deal, universal child care, and a wealth tax, according to exit polling. Anthony, what do progressives need to do to not just win the ideological battle, but to win the electability battle? Because that's really what we're losing. We're losing the electability battle to Joe. We're winning the ideological battle.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good, great question, you know, and I think if we have the answers, you know, we wouldn't necessarily be here right now. But I think if you look at nuance and you look historically, I mean, take someone, and I'm not comparing Bernie Sanders to this individual, but I'm just using this as an example of the type of messaging that gets put out when we discuss class warfare. Look at someone like Martin Luther King. Great individual. You know, we have to understand that history was essentially whitewashed and rewritten. He was one of the most hated individuals in America when he was alive, right before his assassination. And what was he fighting for? Human rights, human dignity. He recognized and connected racism to class struggle and in the economy. So we have to understand that though individuals may recognize that Medicare for all is wanted and is the right path, it's something that goes on and is lost in translation when we're telling them, you have to vote for a Bernie Sanders. You have to vote for an individual that is connecting this directly to capitalistic oppression. So I don't necessarily have that answer. But what I truly believe, what I'm seeing on the ground, and I can only speak to my truth, is, you know, I'm in a district that when you go into it, I'm not trying to overgeneralize, but primarily in the black community, older black voters were leaning Bloomberg, are leaning Biden. The incumbent has actually endorsed Biden. And then what was interesting, when you go into more of the suburban areas, we have some sections of the suburban area that shifted from Bernie to Elizabeth Warren. And we know, you know, that's been contentious in some progressive areas still now, even though Elizabeth Warren is still not in this race. So what I'm doing is I don't go directly to the door and say, hey, you know, I'm supporting Bernie Sanders, or hey, I'm a Democratic Socialist, or hey, vote for me. What I do is I tell my story. I make that connection back to when I was in the military and I literally had to serve with racists, like literal people that hated black folk. Never saw a person of color, didn't believe that women should be in power, didn't believe that trans people should serve. We had to protect each other. And the one thing that I recognized and noticed and identified that we made a connection to was poverty and struggle. We may have disagreed on everything else, but we made a connection on struggle. So what I do when I go to the doors and I'm knocking, I just tell my truth within the struggle, and then I make that connection. Because I think what people have to understand, and you mentioned it earlier, you may identify yourself as middle class or upper middle class, but I truly believe that doesn't exist anymore. Unless you're in the top 1%, you are part of the oppressed. And eventually, a level of oppression is going to be at your doorstep. And I think that's what we have to challenge individuals to get to. Don't wait till a problem's at your doorstep. Tap into intersectionality and recognize that if you fight for women's rights, if you fight for Black Lives Matter, trans rights, immigrants' rights, so on and so forth, now you won't have to fight for yourself in the future. And I think that's the message that needs to get put out there, because too many people are comfortable in saying that, yes, I want Medicare for all, but you know what? I have the privilege to just say, let's get rid of Trump right now. I'm not truly ready to be uncomfortable. If we don't get uncomfortable now, we're not going to have a world left for our children and our children's children.
Yeah, well said. I'm glad you brought up MLK too, because, you know, civil rights were divisive. Until they were passed, you know, a woman's right to vote at one point in our country, that was divisive. Mm-hmm. You know, gay marriage was divisive until it happened. So I think what not enough people understand is that bold progressive change is always divisive until it happens and it transforms our country. Then all of a sudden it becomes really popular. Right. And right. So we're the ones, you know, people like you who are running for office. And, you know, the AOCs of the world and Bernie Sanders and progressive activists, you know, like myself and so many others around the country, you know, we're painted as quote unquote divisive because we are challenging the status quo. And the reason we're challenging the status quo is because the status quo isn't working, right? Like, I don't think people really connect that. Like, the status quo, if we don't do something different and we don't change the status quo, our environment is going to, you know, the climate catastrophe is going to keep destroying our communities, and capitalism is going to keep destroying our planet. And, you know, people are going to keep dying from a lack of health care, you know, because they had to ration their insulin. So we have to challenge the status quo. And I also think, you know, something else that keeps popping in my head is, look, Bernie's not the divisive one. It's the rich and the powerful are really the ones who are dividing us, right? And the corporate media and the political establishment have been attacking Bernie for 4 years because Bernie has the courage to challenge the status quo and fight for fundamental change that lifts up the working people of this country. But the working people aren't the ones that are divisive. It's the ones at the top who don't want to give up anything. They're the ones who are really dividing us.
Definitely, definitely. You know, I mean, I couldn't have said it better. You know, I 100% agree. And, you know, one thing that, and I think we're all challenged with this, because, you know, you and I communicate sometimes on Twitter, I see your posts on and so forth, is, you know, I truly believe that civility is a tool of the oppressor. When you have individuals that are literally waking up every day and fighting to wake up the next day, trying to and attempting to dictate towards them and to them how to communicate their frustrations, how to communicate their desire for change, that's part of oppression. Civility is a tool of the oppressor. I mean, similar to Colin Kaepernick calling out police brutality, but you shouldn't take a knee because that makes me uncomfortable. We have to move past how individuals are communicating. I recognize, definitely, I think there's individuals on all sides, a small population that sometimes are the loudest in the room and you know, give the narrative that they overrepresent someone. But the majority of us, we're just ready for change. And we're tired of the narratives that get pushed out there by the corporations and the media. As you stated, CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, they are embedded with corporations. Okay, I mean, Jeff Bezos, how many papers does he own? Right. So they're purposely trying to create narratives. I mean, we talked about MLK. Guess who was called a communist when he was fighting? MLK.
Yep.
Guess who were called communists when they were fighting? The Black Panther Party, Angela Davis. So this playbook is nothing new. So we have to challenge ourselves to go beyond these narratives that get placed upon us, and we have to create our own narratives by educating ourselves and understanding that they do not want change to occur.
Well, and you know, going back to MLK, what's so interesting is, you know, there are so many people, like every MLK day, you know, every white person in America is like, oh, I love MLK. I love MLK. But I'm like, do they know that MLK was a democratic socialism, a socialist? Like MLK didn't believe that capitalism was at the crux of so many of the systemic issues that we face. And so, you know, I said to a friend the other day, I said, look, if democratic socialism was good enough for MLK, then guess what? It's good enough for me. And, you know, the other thing I think that gets lost in a lot of this is that the things that progressives are fighting for, like, there's no far left in America. What we're fighting for is the center of every other democratic nation in the world, right? It's just that people have been programmed by the corporate media and by corporate greed to think it's extreme for everyone in America to have healthcare, right? Mm-hmm. To think that it's extreme, you know, for us to have universal childcare. It's not extreme. It's about whether we want to be a decent, compassionate, and humane nation, or whether we want to continue to be a greedy, racist, or heartless nation. Like, those are the two choices.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, one of the biggest cons in this capitalistic society is the con of individualism. That narrative getting pushed out there that grab yourselves up by the bootstraps. We have to be honest with ourselves. The legacy of slavery, the legacy of oppression, no one that has made it has literally just grab themselves up by the bootstraps. This is part of our system that exists. So we have to move out of that individualistic mindset that I'm going to get mine. It's up to them to get theirs. It's someone's choice if they're homeless. It's someone's choice if they're having mental health issues. It is not. As a collective, we have to come together as human beings, ultimately. You know, I just watched a special on, you know, Chairman Fred Hampton and the Black Panther Party in Chicago, to where they created the original Rainbow Push Coalition, you know, not the one that Jesse Jackson co-opted. And the original Rainbow Push Coalition talked about this class struggle. Bring your individual, you know, gripes in. Bring your individuality in. But recognize and understand that impoverished blacks, that impoverished Puerto Ricans, and impoverished whites can come together in unity and attack the capitalistic system. That is the only way we are going to win. So we have to push intersectional movements. We have to push populism, and we have to push collectivism, because that individualistic mindset is not true.
Yeah. Well, and I think people get lost in, like, we don't want free stuff. What we want is our government to use our tax dollars on healthcare and on education, and not to use our tax dollars on endless wars and corporate welfare. That's all it is. It's a shift. And it's basically like, we want to use our money to actually pay for goods and services that is going to benefit our nation, and stop using our tax dollars to benefit the wealthy and the 1%. I mean, we really do have socialism in America, but we have socialism for the rich.
Yep.
And I would say that in essence is our problem. We have way too much capitalism, and we don't have enough socialism. And the other thing is that I think some people miss is, it's not, and I think Bernie makes this mistake a lot, it's not about making capitalism go away altogether. Capitalism is never going to go away altogether. But what the billionaire class doesn't want people to know is that it's not an either or, right? Capitalism and socialism can coexist together. Right now, it's just we have way too much capitalism, and we don't have strong enough social programs to help some of this systemic inequality. So when you look at countries in Europe, it's more of a hybrid system. Yeah, they still got capitalism in Denmark, but they also have really strong social programs. So I think that's kind of a missed opportunity on Bernie's campaign. I do think that a lot of more moderate people think, oh, Bernie wants to get rid of capitalism and replace it with socialism. That's not even what Bernie's advocating for, right? Like, the only industry that he wants to really become socialized is health insurance. That's it. Everything else would stay the same.
Yeah, I mean, basically, as you stated, we already have socialism within our country. And I think that's the distinction that needs to be made from democratic socialism to socialism. And people, again, you know, some people, let's be honest, purposefully, they know and they don't want to know. You know, they're sending out misinformation on purpose to, you know, redirect the conversation and to get individuals not to vote in their best interest. But you're absolutely right. You know, what we're fighting for and what we believe in. I'm not here to tell someone you cannot make money. I'm not here to tell someone that if you have a good idea, you cannot create a corporation and profit. But what we are here to say is, as you stated, every person deserves the ability to take care of themselves and their family. In the wealthiest nation in the world, no one, and I truly believe no one, should be too poor to live. That's what we're fighting for. Each and every individual, you know, something, it hit me about 8 months ago. We visited 10 cities in Chicagoland area because there's a war being waged against our homeless. We have about 80,000 homeless alone in Chicago when you account for individuals that are couch hopping and house hopping. So when we went to a 10th city, you know, we went Facebook Live. We didn't put anybody on camera, but, you know, we kind of went into the area. And what people were saying is, where was everyone? So many individuals didn't understand that the majority of homeless individuals are actually working. They're working multiple jobs. They're working full-time jobs. But because of the vast wealth disparities that exist, because we're placing profit before people, they're homeless. They're struggling on a daily basis. So you're absolutely right. You know, a hybrid model, I do agree. Of course, you know, there's going to be some individuals that truly believe that capitalism can be completely be eliminated. Capitalism cannot be completely eliminated, I don't think, in any country, in any region. There's nothing wrong with profiting. But we have to get to a point where we create a system where no one is too poor to live, and everyone has the opportunity to succeed. Your race, your gender, who you love, your ability, where you're born, your area code or zip code should not determine your ability to prosper.
Absolutely. And we have to also take a hard look in the mirror at ourselves, because when you compare our nation to European nations, you know, here we are, the wealthiest nation in the world. Yet we can't afford universal health care, and we can't afford universal child care, and we can't afford universal public college, even though all the countries in Europe have managed to afford it. And I think what it gets down to is because, yeah, we are the wealthiest nation in the history of the world, but we're also the greediest nation in the history of the world. And that's where we have to decide and have a moment, a reckoning of what kind of nation do we want to be? Because if we continue down this path of just, you know, unregulated greed and more is more and profit over people, it's going to get to a point where our country will no longer be able to sustain itself with this level of inequality. You know, so I kind of want to move along here to our next little bit. Another thing we're seeing in the primary is a massive generational split in the Democratic Party. Biden has a big advantage with voters who are over 50, while Bernie has a big advantage with voters under 50. Why are older voters so resistant to progressivism? And what can we do to bring, to ease their fear and bring more people into the progressive movement?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I think there's, a lot of nuance involved. You know, what's interesting to me, you know, I talked to my parents who are both, you know, in their late 60s, early 70s. They've actually shifted and moved over, you know, to Bernie. But with so many, I think, older adults and individuals, maybe not necessarily that they don't necessarily identify as, they got to the point that they were at because of progress. You know, my great, great, great grandfather was essentially, was a slave. You know, my great, great, great grandmother was a slave. They went from slavery. Slavery ended to sharecropping. We had to deal with sharecropping and Jim Crow and so on and so forth. We progressed to the point that we're at now. And that happened because of individuals fighting, individuals rocking the boat, individuals not accepting status quo. But I think so many people in their older ages, and I'm not going to overgeneralize, I'm just, you know, using assumptions of what I've experienced and what I've encountered, you get into a level of comfort. You're in that mindset of you're near the end of age. You're not ready or willing to literally rock the boat. You don't want to hear about change because, as you said earlier, change is uncomfortable. Change can be dangerous for a lot of individuals. So I think that's scary for so many older Americans throughout this country who are essentially comfortable within what they have and are afraid that they may lose it if they fight or if they try to push a little bit further. Then you have the younger generation. I'm a teacher. So many of the things that I've involved myself in and coalitions built are with, you know, the younger demographic voters, my students. We've changed policy within our district. We've changed and pushed for policy across this country. They're no longer sitting back and patiently knocking on the door and waiting for someone to open it or waiting for someone to save them. Our youth are kicking the door in. They're ready for change now. because we're seeing the direction it is going in. I mean, think about this. So many individuals that are older, how much did college cost for our parents? Even though my parents particularly didn't go to college, college was affordable for so many individuals that are boomers in older age.
Yep.
When they went to college. You could have a home, a white picket fence, and a dog or a cat, whatever you prefer, even a hamster, whatever you like, back in the day, and live comfortably.
Yep.
That doesn't happen anymore. How many of us that are under 50 are still living with our parents or have roommates purposefully throughout our 20s and 30s because
yep.
we cannot afford to live alone. We cannot afford to have children. We cannot afford to start family. So I think that disparity that exists, that many of the older generation may not have necessarily experienced within that middle class realm, that's the difference that separates us, and that's what we have to tap into. I mean, similar to my parents, I'll be honest, and I'll end it here with this. Like my parents, my father, I'll be honest, I didn't vote when I was younger. You know, that doesn't mean I wasn't boots to the ground. I was engaged because that narrative gets put out, oh, you know, our younger people don't vote. I was jaded by the political process. Mm. But you know what? Because my mother and father experienced not being able to vote, you know, they experienced that. It was that important to them, if that makes sense. They had the direct personal experience. And I think that's what kind of separates the younger generation, 49 and below, from that older generation. At this present point, we're experiencing the middle class not existing. We're experiencing crippling college debt and so on and so forth, medical debt. So I think maybe that plays a role as well, because we have those direct experiences. So we're understanding the time is now. We cannot be patient. We cannot wait. We have to kick these doors in. So it's important that we try to communicate that to the younger generation, not to overgeneralize, and bring them over to understand your children. This shouldn't be a fight left for our grandchildren or our great-grandchildren. This is a fight that we could win now if we understand who and why we're leaving the world to someone else.
Yeah, that's well said. You know, I also think that, you know, I've been through a few election cycles now, and even when Trump wasn't around, I mean, yeah, Trump is, we got to get rid of Trump and we will get rid of Trump. You know, Trump has got to go. That's a given. But even before Trump, it was always, I always feel like the left, you know, the center of our party always takes the left for granted. You know, it always feels to me at least that, you know, progressives are always asked to compromise our values and vote for the more moderate candidate. But compromising our values means corporate greed will continue to destroy our planet and our democracy. It's time for moderates in our party to compromise too, right? Because we are, you know, we are a progressive and a moderate party. And I think, you know, the more moderates are just used to kind of like, okay, you know, you guys just need to hold your nose and vote for the more moderate candidate. But like, it would be nice to have something to vote for and not just going in, like I said earlier, and voting against Trump. Like, I want to vote for something.
Yeah, I mean, no question. And again, you know, you all could quote me on this. You know, I'm here to make a statement. Of course, you know, I endorsed Bernie Sanders before the health scare. Elizabeth Warren was my number two choice. She's out of the race. Bernie Sanders, of course, I'm still fighting and still pushing on the ground, building coalitions. I will, worst case scenario, you know, if Bernie, you know, loses this primary, I do plan to vote for Joe Biden. But I plan to vote for Joe Biden being fully aware that he's not changing anything at a systemic level, that the oppression that we face is going to continue to remain. Trump is extremely dangerous, so we do have to get him out of office, but we also have to recognize why we can't have a Joe Biden in office, if that makes sense. We have to move forward. And as you stated before this section, they call us, what, far, you know, too left. We're the radical ones. In other countries, we're actually the normal ones.
Yes.
And we have to recognize that and understand that. How can you be moderate and straddle the fence when it comes to human rights and human dignity and the ability to live and survive? There's nothing moderate about that. You're either for it or you're against it. So it's extremely important that people pick sides because we're going to continue to die. We're going to continue to struggle because if Joe Biden wins this, if he has 4 years, however long he has, we're going to basically risk another Trump because we haven't treated the root cause issues that exist.
Yeah, that's well said. I mean, Republicans never moderate their message to appeal to Democrats.
No.
Yet centrist Democrats always moderate their message to appeal to Republicans. And what's happened is it's resulted in America being drugged so far to the right that we're tipping into the Atlantic Ocean. You know, and we need to move left to recenter America. So like you stated, if Bernie doesn't win, of course I will get behind Joe Biden because I understand the threat that Donald Trump is. However, I will say this, Joe Biden is going to have to reach out to the progressive movement and I will work my hardest to push Joe Biden to the left on economic issues, on healthcare issues, you know, because we need to. Again, like, we are running out of time to save our planet, and we are running out of time to save our people and heal. You know, I hear Joe Biden say, and I like when he says it, he wants to heal America. Well, newsflash, we cannot heal America unless we fix the systemic issues of inequality in America. And to fix those issues, you need bold, progressive policies. You know, he hasn't put forth bold enough policies to heal all of this inequality. So, of course, I will support Joe Biden. But my, here's the other thing. My vote, you know, my vote, like, you have to earn votes in a democracy, right? And too many people, we just give our votes away and we don't hold our elected officials accountable. We're essentially giving all of our power away. And so then they just do whatever they want. Like, we need to hold them accountable. So if Joe becomes president, like, he will meet some resistance in a good way to make sure that, like, he, you know, doesn't get pulled to the right by Republicans, because that's what happens. Republicans pulled Obama to the right. You know, Mitch McConnell pulled Obama to the right. So we have to keep the progressive movement vibrant so we can pull us back to decency and humanity and compassion.
Yeah, and there's still a chance. You know, I still believe in Bernie Sanders. You know, I challenge each and every one of us. If you're, you know, phone banking for an hour, phone bank for 2 hours. If you're canvassing out there, you know, knocking on 200 doors, knock on 400 doors. Bernie still has a chance and opportunity because I truly believe. You know, you mentioned earlier about Joe talking about healing the country. You know, I'm going to bring in someone else. We talked about MLK earlier. One of my favorite Malcolm X quotes is, and I'm going to paraphrase it, you know, if you stab me in the back and the knife goes in 9 inches, if you pull that knife out 6 inches, that is not progress, because 3 inches are still within me. Mm. And I think that's the difference between Bernie and Joe. Joe is that 3 inches that is still be in us. That is not healing. That is not progress. That is not treating the root cause and why someone stabbed you in the first place. Bernie is trying to address why someone stabbed you in the first place, and he's trying to pull the knife out completely, all 9 inches, as well as heal the wound. So if we truly believe in revolution, if we truly believe that now is the time in 2020, we cannot give up. We cannot surrender. We have to give every damn thing we have, and excuse my language, and put it behind Bernie Sanders until this primary is over to make sure that he wins this.
That's well said. You know, our wounds are too deep for a Band-Aid. I mean, like, we really need, you know, we need big structural change. You know, we're kind of running to the end of the podcast here. My last question for you, Anthony, is what have you learned about yourself in running for Congress? And more importantly, what have you learned about America?
Yeah, I mean, wow, that's a deep question. And that's a great question. You know, this movement is so much bigger than one candidate and one race. You know, we play a small role in this movement. We're standing on the shoulders of giants. Mm. There's going to be individuals fighting. This is a marathon, not a sprint. When we're no longer 10 toes down on this earth. But what I learned about us, because this is a us thing, I have so many wonderful individuals on my team and family and this community that support, that we're not afraid to swim. And what I mean by that is, as we stated earlier, civility is a tool of the oppressor. We're rocking the boat here, pushing for change. And when you rock the boat, one thing I learned about America, as well as ourselves, is you better be willing and ready to swim, because you may get pushed over and somebody may want you to drown. The attacks that we've experienced, you know, at a level, you have to be willing to risk and sacrifice things for change. And that's what we challenge everybody to understand. I've been threatened. I've been suspended from work several times. Mm. Individuals have, you know, attacked me, you know, and attacked our organizations and our groups. But that's going to happen. We have to expect that. This is not going to be easy. So, you know, lastly, I just want to say we have to understand power is never going to be given to us. If we want power for the people, we're going to have to take power. So understand that. And I think that's what we learned about ourselves, that we're not afraid to fight. We're not afraid to take power. And we learn that we're able to swim when we're rocking that boat.
Hmm. I am proud to swim with you and to fight alongside you, Anthony. How can people follow you on Twitter?
Definitely. Our Twitter, Instagram is Anthony V. Clark 20. Our website is VoteAnthonyClark.com. Facebook is also Anthony V. Clark 20. Join us, follow us. We've built huge coalitions, you know, fundraising, volunteering, everything is at next level. So we're going to continue to fight, and we believe in it.
And I would like to ask all our listeners to go to, what is it? VoteForAnthonyClark.com.
VoteAnthonyClark.com. That's Clark without an E, C-L-A-R-K.
VoteAnthonyClark.com and pitch in $25 or pitch in whatever you can. Because again, it's not just the presidency. if we want real change in this country, we have to get it through Congress, right? That's who writes the laws, and that's who can pass Medicare for all. So that's what's so important to remember, that, you know, if Bernie doesn't win the primary, you know, yes, I will support Joe Biden in the general, but I'm also going to support all of these amazing progressives who are running for Congress, because that's how we can create real change, by continuing to elect more AOCs and more Rashida Tlaibs and more Anthony Clarks. So, Anthony, thank you so much for being on the podcast today, and I look forward to continue to be in this fight with you.
No, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. Truly enjoyed our conversations, and I look forward to continuing to converse with you and fight with you in solidarity. All power to the people.
All right. Thank you, Anthony.
Thanks, Anthony.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Wow. Awesome.
Yeah. He's a fighter.
He is. And look, did you hear everybody? I will vote for Joe Biden.
Yes.
In the general.
Of course you will.
Goodness. Stop attacking me.
Because the alternative is Donald Trump.
God, I've never voted for a Republican in my life. I want to see him embrace progressives, because that's how he'll win. You know, you got to win the left if you want to win the White House.
Absolutely.
And I think one of the mistakes that was made in 2016, we're also mad at each other. There was just both sides going at each other. Let's, you know, if Biden becomes the nominee, let's I don't want him to take the left for granted. Right. I want him to earn the votes, because that's what it's going to take for him to win. He's got to fight for every vote.
Right. And if bold progressive ideas are going to get through Congress, there've got to be bold progressives in Congress.
Right. Which is why my podcast, we're going to shift to a lot of that.
Yes.
Over the next coming months. We have a lot of progressives coming up on the podcast.
Yeah, so, we do.
Thanks again for listening. And before we close out the show, we got to tell you about one more time about Plexaderm.
Yeah.
I've been using it for about a year.
Yep.
It's a rapid reduction wrinkle serum.
Yep.
You put it underneath your eyes. Within like 5 minutes, the wrinkles, the under eye bags are gone.
You've seen the TV commercials and you've seen how fast they work, and you're like, that can't work. No, it really does work that fast.
It really does work.
Yeah.
So go to tryplexaderm.com and use my code VOICES for 50% off. A full-size bottle of Plexaderm plus an additional $10 off. That's right, 50% off plus an extra $10 off. This offer is also available by calling 1-800-685-1292 and mentioning code VOICES. Plexaderm is backed by a 30-day money-back guarantee. Visit tryplexaderm.com today and use code VOICES at checkout. That's tryplexaderm.com, code VOICES. Thanks for listening to an all-new episode of Amped Up with Proud Resistor. If you want to tweet about the episode, you can go to Twitter and use the hashtag AmpedUp, and we'll catch you next week with an all-new episode.